Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We have been talking now for some time about a threat to our republic, a very serious one that is largely escaped public notice until now. I'm happy to report that on Saturday evening, Donald J. Trump, at the Conservative Political Action Conference, which we have been reporting from and will have some highlights of in coming segments, talked about the World Health Organization, among many other things, in a two-hour speech. But about 90 minutes into it, he spoke about what he declared was actually a better name for the WHO, namely the We Hide Outbreaks organization. It prompted me to think, well, there are a couple of other names. We Help Othering and We Host Operations, particularly for the Communist Party of China. Those would also be apt names. We wanted to double back and speak with a man that we had the privilege of chatting with last week. I've always found it edifying to visit with him, but particularly so in this context, because he is the author, among other things, of a terrific book entitled The Authoritarians, which talks about the progress of those who seek to tyrannically govern the world from the 18th century to the present. And I think it's the 19th century to the present. But he is very astute on these matters, and we're always delighted to catch up with Jonathan Emord. It turns out, I had somehow missed this, that he is a candidate for the United States Senate from Virginia, among other things, as well. So congratulations to you, Jonathan, on that quest and for being willing to come back on the show and talk a bit about Donald Trump's remarks and more broadly, what's going on with this World Health Organization. Glad to have you with us. So what did you make of Mr. Trump's comments and specifically his call to pick up where he left off as president, namely withdrawing the United States from this organization? Is that?
Well, the United States has to withdraw from the World Health Organization. It really is doing us no good and is doing us great harm. So if you believe in defending our national security, if you want to ensure that individuals, the doctor-patient relationship is maintained and individuals have sovereignty over their own bodies and their own health, you simply can't divest control over us to an international body that's essentially the lapdog for the communist Chinese. And that's the reality, and it's outrageous that this administration is proceeding to tie itself ever closer to the World Health Organization, given the realities.
Well, tie it to itself is one way of putting it. I think subordinating all of us to it is another. But let me just double back here for a second, Jonathan, because what you said sounds, well, over the top. I mean, the patient-doctor relationship could somehow be affected by some sort of understanding with this distant organization out of Geneva. And yet, we've actually had a taste of what these guys are capable of in the course of what I think of as pandemic 1.0, the whole approach that the World Health Organization took at the behest of the Chinese Communist Party in response to the so-called Wuhan virus, also known as COVID-19 virus. So remind us the lessons that we should learn that make clear what you've just described is not, in fact, hyperbole.
Well, we saw our own government adopt essentially the platform for controlling the population that the Communist Chinese advocated through the World Health Organization. Our own government instituted a system that censored health information, denied people the right to criticize the government's position on the treatment of COVID-19, insisted on a one-size-fits-all approach, vaccination approach, and didn't allow doctors to deviate without being subjected to suspension and revocation of their licenses through the state medical boards, at the behest and urging and in a consistent manner with the CDC's recommendations. That authoritarian approach to a very dangerous virus was itself indicative of the very same kind of a thing that they're going to foist upon us, but via a international organization. We can't allow that to happen again. We can't allow our own government to deprive people of independent judgment and free information flow in the midst of this. We didn't have a serious scientific discussion of the options to treat the disease. We didn't even have a treatment approach because they were so invested in a one-size-fits-all vaccination approach. And if we had a wide open, robust, and free environment in this country, we would have had a much better response. We would have had innovation that didn't happen. We would have had the opportunity for patients to have their specific symptoms treated. You know, patients express this disease in multiple symptoms. Individuals were not possessed of the same symptomology. And it was all heavily predicated, of course, on their own individual medical history and comorbidities. If we allowed physicians the freedom to treat individual patients and to use independent professional judgment, we would have had much better outcomes. We would have saved far more lives. So this approach that they're advocating is ruinous.
It is ruinous. It's been shown to be ruinous. And the thing I want to just underscore, Jonathan E. Moore, is that this was during a period when, to be sure, the World Health Organization was doing the bidding of the Chinese Communist Party, both in lying about the nature of the disease and where it came from, but also using Chinese Marxist techniques to other the unvaccinated. At one point, Joe Biden actually said this is now a pandemic of the unvaccinated, which was untrue, of course. And then there's this whole China model that was what was essentially imposed on us. But my point is this, all of that was during a period when the WHO's authority was limited. It was advisory. And yet we saw it being cited as the reasons why we had to do the lockdowns and the mask mandates and the vaccines and the vaccine passports. Now what we're talking about, as you know, and we will be discussing at length in a very important webinar with your help on Tuesday, March 7th, from 1 to about 2:30 in the afternoon Eastern time, is the fact that they're going to confer, if the Biden team and other nations around the world have their way, on the World Health Organization authorities to direct, to oblige certain behavior in response to what they consider to be public health emergencies of international concern. What could possibly go wrong, given their track record, Jonathan?
Well, anytime you centralize control in an authoritarian way over health issues, it is utterly disastrous, particularly with a novel disease. It's utterly disastrous because you look for innovation, free thinking, scientific debate, and for a national security issue that is allowing your country in the midst of a threat of this sort not to have control over its ability to have independent jurisdiction, and instead to cede that to an international organization.
Wholly unaccountable international organization at that.
Wholly unaccountable, but beholden to the communist Chinese again and again.
Jonathan, hold the thought. We have to take a short break. We're going to come right back with more with Jonathan E. Moore, a constitutional attorney, the author of The Authoritarians, and a candidate for the U.S. Senate from the Commonwealth of Virginia. That and much more right after these brief remarks. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thanks for tuning in to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney. If you find the contents of this program to be informative and valuable, I'd like to ask you to consider playing a part in supporting the organization that makes Securing America possible, our Center for Security Policy. We call the center the home of the special forces in the war of ideas. We feature such warriors daily on Securing America as they diagnose the dangers facing our nation, develop strategies for thwarting them, and work with other veteran national security practitioners, legislators, and the American people to execute those strategies. Thanks to our friends at Salem Media, we're able to expand greatly awareness of the Center for Security Policy's efforts and their impact. Like the real special forces, our effectiveness depends on having the ammunition, in our case, money, to perform our mission. Please consider making a tax-deductible contribution at securefreedom.org. Thanks. We're back, and we are visiting with Jonathan Emort, a constitutional attorney and a scholar of matters involving the Constitution, and also the author of a tremendously important book about arguably the greatest threat to our Constitution, namely from authoritarians of various stripes and some foreign, some domestic for that matter. It is the title of his book. And the subject that we are pressing forward and trying to understand as it pertains to the World Health Organization, which Donald Trump has described as the, not WHO, World Health Organization, but WHO, We Hide Outbreaks Organization, based on its performance in the recent pandemic. Jonathan, I wanted to just back the lens up. We'll talk a little later in the program with a wonderful guest by the name of Karen Sigmund. But just to sort of presage what she's going to tell us about how authoritarians have historically used the pretext of caring for your health and your safety as a justification for the repression that they impose. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. There are many examples in our own history of the rise of authoritarianism documented in my book, The Authoritarians. One of them, for example, is the eugenics movement. So from 1907 to, believe it or not, 1983, 60,000 Americans were sterilized against their will in the United States. This process was part of a movement that began in earnest with a Supreme Court decision called Buck versus Bell. And believe it or not, Oliver Wendell Holmes, who's considered in the West one of the greatest jurists in American history and world history, is actually a eugenicist. He was a eugenicist, and he strongly advocated it. And the case in issue was a sham case. It was made up. The defense didn't actually defend the defendant. They assisted the prosecution. And it went up to the Supreme Court, and you have this decision called Buck versus Bell, in which they usher into the United States by obliterating the 14th Amendment protections for an individual, the power of the state to dictate to individuals declared unfit, including those whose only lack of fitness was that they lived a lifestyle that was not considered appropriate, on the wrong side of the tracks, so to speak. And they were then forced into these camps and were sterilized, 60,000. So you have this great threat of authoritarianism. When you turn over health issues to an authoritarian body like the World Health Organization, and you divest yourselves of both national sovereignty and individual sovereignty, you give over power to another state, an independent entity that is a effective proxy here for the communist Chinese, the power to control an individual's health. And that means that their autonomy is under the control. There can be no greater threat to individual freedom than to deprive you of your sovereignty and your autonomy over your own body. And that becomes an acute situation in a crisis where fear is rampant, and you have people who are desperately seeking answers. Far better to have our freedoms protected as the Constitution requires, and that we be given the freedom of choice through a wide open and robust debate in which physicians don't feel intimidated by authoritarian figures, but act according to their own professional judgment.
You know, I saw a film recently, a documentary film about eugenics in the United States, and was really stunned to discover that it was not some, you know, fringe, preoccupation, but it had actually become widely subscribed to in our, early 20th century, particularly. And Jonathan, I guess this brings us to the question at hand, though, which is, if we have authoritarians, and there is no more extreme example of it, arguably, in the world today than the Chinese Communist Party, using the World Health Organization with sweeping new powers to decide, A, what constitutes a public health emergency of international concern, and B, to dictate what individual nations must do in response to it. This has the potential to go seriously wrong, obviously. And the question is the seriousness with which we could find ourselves not only having our sovereignty diminished and our freedoms, but actually our physical well-being adversely impacted, such that, as you said earlier, and Donald Trump argued, having tried to withdraws from the World Health Organization while he was president, only to have his initiative to do that rescinded by Joe Biden early in his presidency. Is this the sort of thing that, in your estimation, Jonathan, would rise to the level where, for example, the kind of leverage that the Republicans in the House of Representatives currently have with this debt ceiling negotiation, whether to raise it or not, and if so, how much, should be used as an instrument for compelling the president to withdraw us from this agreement, this organization, before its power becomes even greater and again, more detrimental to all of us?
Certainly. I mean, I think we have to use every vehicle available to us to act against any effort to deprive the United States of its nationality, of its national sovereignty, of our freedoms. The only thing we have standing in the way of communist China ruling over our bodies and our freedom is our defense of our sovereignty and of our nationality. We cannot afford to experiment with our sovereignty in an institution that is beholden to the communist Chinese. This is insane. This is the equivalent of the open borders policy applied writ large over the whole population. It fits perfectly within an authoritarian mindset. It fits perfectly within Soros's global ambitions. It fits perfectly into this Democrat Party's adoption of socialism. It is just a further effort on a major scale to deprive us of liberty. And, you know, we can't survive as a nation unless our Constitution is protected. And there's no more fundamental foundation of the Constitution than the idea that an individual within our country can have their life and their liberty and their property protected as the Constitution provides. Ensuring that is not an option for the president. It's a constitutional requirement. When he swears an oath of office, he's not behaving as a commander-in-chief. He's not behaving in his constitutional role. He's abdicated that. And he's now in the service of our enemies.
He's doing their bidding. If indeed he goes down this road, yeah.
I think he is even without it. His actions to destroy a republic and supplant it with a socialist state is something that the Constitution does not allow. He can only achieve that by abdicating his role. which is what he's done. He is the equivalent of a Manchurian candidate. He is a Manchurian candidate.
Well, Manchurian president, I think one might
president
say, given that he's gone past the candidate stage. Jonathan, this is so troubling on so many different levels, especially going back to what we touched on a moment ago, that this isn't a hypothetical. We've actually seen this movie, albeit under somewhat less dangerous terms than those that are now in prospect. I appreciate so much your clarity on this, Jonathan, and your dot connecting between this example of authoritarianism and some of what has preceded it, to the great detriment of our country, our people, and countless billions others elsewhere around the world. We appreciate your visits with us, sir. We look forward to the next. In the meantime, Godspeed on your campaign and other efforts. And thank you again for this important book, The Authoritarians. I hope all of our audience will check it out. We'll be right back with more on the other side of a short break. Stay tuned.
And throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're still coming to you from CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference here outside Washington, D.C. We're covering a range of very important topics with important individuals who are bringing to the conference and to its various participants extraordinarily insightful recommendations to help preserve our country. And I can think of few more important than protecting one of its most essential institutions, the Supreme Court of the United States, from being packed or otherwise adulterated beyond recognition. A man who is devoting his time these days to keeping the court from being packed is our next guest. His name is Roman Bueller. He is a driving force behind what he calls the Keep Nine Amendment.
Delighted to have him with us.
Roman, thank you so much. Really appreciate being here.
Good to have you with us. Tell us a little bit about who's trying to change this institution, the nine-justice Supreme Court we've known for so long and I think continue to need.
So there are more than 50 left-wing Democratic members of Congress who support something called the Judiciary Act of 2021 that would expand the Supreme Court conveniently by four more justices so they can put a woke progressive majority on the Supreme Court and undo most of the constitutionalist decisions that the Supreme Court has issued in recent years. And people say, well, you know, they'll never have the votes to pack the court. But here's the thing. If you look at every one of the Democratic members of Congress in the House and the Senate, they have one thing in common. Not one of them has dared to support the Keep Nine Amendment, which makes sure that court packing will never happen. Now, in 2020,
Is that an amendment to the Constitution?
Yes. The Keep Nine Amendment would be the shortest amendment to the Constitution. All it says is the Supreme Court of the United States shall be composed of nine justices. And if we get that amendment proposed by Congress and ratified by the states, then politicians in Washington will no longer have the power to manipulate the size of the Supreme Court for political advantage. And this
now,
amendment...
the number has changed over time, is that right?
Absolutely.
It wasn't nine at the beginning, but it has been for quite yes. some years.
So in the first 75 years of the Republic, the Supreme Court was number was changed seven times for political advantage by both parties. But after 1869, a tradition grew up, a very important tradition, that the Supreme Court is nine justices and Congress doesn't manipulate it. Some of our listeners may remember that Franklin Roosevelt tried to pack the court in the 1930s, but he failed because of overwhelming public opposition. But now progressives have decided they're going to try to do it again. And the warning sign is that not a single member of the Democratic Party in the House and the Senate will support this Keep Nine Amendment, even though it was first introduced in 2020 by a Democrat, Colin Peterson of Minnesota, and a Republican, Ted Cruz of Texas.
Wow. So we're looking at a situation which I think takes on even more importance in light of several things that I've seen elsewhere around the world.
Yes.
In Brazil, for example, and even more arguably egregiously in Israel at the moment, courts have been effectively turned into instruments of tyranny, dominating the other branches of their respective governments, to the point where you now have wildly leftist majorities essentially dictating whatever the government elected by the people, whatever the people, for those that matter, in those countries want. Could we find ourselves in a similar circumstance if the court is packed and takes on this wildly leftist coloration?
Well, the best example of that is Venezuela, where you have now, you know, 30 or 40 or more justices on the court because Maduro packed it to basically neuter the legislative branch of the government. So it is the left strategy, right? The left has a very simple strategy. It's absolute power. And the only way you get absolute power in our system is you control the Congress, the White House, and the courts. And the next time the Democrats control the Congress and the White House, we can be almost sure that they're going to get rid of the filibuster, probably add D.C. as a new state, and then use their majority to take over the courts so they get the absolute power they want. And the problem is we can't stop them from doing that just by winning elections, because we can't win every election over a 20-year period. So if we're going to stop the left from packing the court, we've got to do an amendment that will prevent them from doing it.
Now, remind us, we're a little rusty on our civics, exactly what is entailed in a constitutional amendment, and is that absolutely necessary to try to protect this court over time?
So amendments are difficult. It takes two-thirds of Congress to propose it, and it takes three-quarters of the states to ratify in both houses, to House and the Senate.
Very high bar.
But if you look at the recent history of amendments in America, we've had a women's right to vote, we had prohibition, we had the repeal of prohibition, we had the two-term limit for president, and most recently the 18-year-old vote. All of those amendments had three things in common. They were very, very simple, they were overwhelmingly popular with the voters, and they became widely known. This amendment is about as simple as you can get. Polling shows that by a 2-to-1 majority, voters would back it. Even more Democrats would support it at the grassroots than would oppose it. And majorities of African-American voters, majorities of Hispanic voters would support it. So if we can make the Keep Nine Amendment a household word, then we can put enough pressure on the political class to propose it and ratify it. That's our strategy.
It does seem as though it's a daunting proposition if you won't get any Democrats to sponsor it. Do you think, even if they won't sponsor it, that with that kind of political support, if it can be generated, you would get them voting sufficient to get to a two-thirds majority in both houses?
Yes, we do, and here's why. Democrats in 2020 talked about court packing, and they got shellacked in a number of elections. They lost probably three Senate seats in part because they wouldn't, they were talking about court packing. So in 2022, the Democrats came up with a new strategy. Many key Democrats, including Fetterman in Pennsylvania, including Kelly in Arizona, Cortez Masto in Nevada, they said, we're against court packing. But no one asked them if they would support an amendment first introduced by a Democrat to make sure it never happened. So if you're a bank robber and you said, I want to rob a bank, but I don't want to outlaw bank robbery, what are you going to think? So in 2024, we want to make sure that a grassroots army out there first educates voters that there is an amendment to ban court packing, and second, demands that candidates in both parties tell the voters, where do you stand? And we think there's going to be a contrast. And if candidates who won't support the amendment begin to lose elections, eventually we think that we're going to get enough bipartisan support to make this amendment part of the Constitution.
You know, I think it was the wit Samuel Johnson in the British history who famously said, the prospect of hanging concentrates the mind wondrously.
Yes.
Losing elections tends to make people think differently about policy issues like this. We only have a couple minutes left, but I did just want to ask you, Roman Bueller, you are more generally focused, as I understand it, on trying to get power back, pursuant to our federalist system, to the states. The Constitution, again, has an incredibly important feature to it, which is enumerated powers are reposed in the federal government, and the rest are remanded to the states. Have I got that right? And what's so important about that?
The 10th Amendment is so powerful because it reserves to the states and the people powers that are not given to the federal government. But if we don't have a Supreme Court that will enforce the 10th Amendment, it doesn't mean much. And I know we don't have a lot of time, but this movement to take away the power of politicians to pack the court, to maybe do other things to take power out of Washington, it can't succeed without the help of grassroots people. So if people are interested in learning more about this amendment and the effort, email us at leaders@keep9.org. leaders@keep9.org. We have a website, www.keep9.org. We can restore self-government to this country, but only if people demand that their politicians are accountable.
And at that website, keep9.org,
right.
Are there ways in which they can actually become engaged in this sort of grassroots army that you're talking about,
right,
and try to help shape this as a voting issue in the 2024 elections?
Yes, we already have a huge grassroots network around the country, but we need more activists. We need activists in every single congressional district in the country, in every state, willing to help spread the word about this amendment, recruit their friends, and hold politicians who won't support this amendment accountable.
Right. And is that something that your site features,
yes,
a means of becoming engaged,
right,
in that way? That's what I'm trying to get at.
The quickest way to get involved is to simply email us at leaders@keep9.org. You can also go to the site, but leaders@keep9.org. Email comes directly to us. We can respond to you immediately and get you involved in this effort.
Key piece of it, I guess, is engagement.
Engagement,
and,
right. Citizen and, engagement.
You know, I think we often talk about things that need to be done on this program and elsewhere, of course. CPAC is all about it,
yes,
after all. But giving people practical steps that translate what needs to be done into things that they personally can become involved in is so vital, and I think, you know, some of us are getting better at it, but I'm very hopeful that given the stakes in this case, that they're going to get engaged with you, Roman Bueller, and the Keep 9 Amendment, and keep9.org. Check it out at leaders.
At keep9.org.
At keep9.org. We're going to be right back with more right after this, but in the meantime, check out that website. See what you can do to become engaged in this fight. It matters for your own freedoms and those of your children and children's children. We'll be right back with more right after this.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute.
The Wall Street Journal disclosed this week that the Chinese Communist Party has again penetrated our country, this time in a way that is far more dangerous and difficult to counteract than its recent spy balloon escapade. Giant Chinese-supplied cranes used to move containers at ports across the country lend themselves to intelligence collection and disruptions. What could possibly go wrong, especially in the event of conflict? The short answer is plenty. Worse yet, our dependency on such cranes is just one example of our insane practice of putting equipment from China in our critical infrastructure. Possibly even more catastrophic is our reliance on some 400 Chinese high-voltage transformers now integrated into our electric grid. Mr. Trump promised Saturday that if reelected, he would propose a 4-year plan to wean ourselves off of essential goods from China. That must start now. This is Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are visiting with some of my best friends here at the Conservative Political Action Conference. Best friends and others who I've gotten a chance to talk to in the course of this really important program. In the former category, best friends, is our next guest, Karen Sigeman. She runs a terrific organization in Los Angeles called the American Freedom Alliance. I've been privileged to participate in any number of her programs over the years, and I'm looking forward to doing so in an upcoming one, I believe in April,
yes,
on the globalists and the communists and what they're up to take us down. This is the second in a series on generally that subject. We're going to hear more about it from the mistress of ceremonies and the prime mover behind really important conversations that will be taking place there as well as here.
Thank you.
Karen,
thank
it's good
you.
To have you here.
So great
Welcome.
To be here, Frank.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about the globalist problem, first of all,
and
then we'll talk about what you're doing to try to expose it.
Okay, so
what do you mean by the term, first of all?
About globalists. Well, we know that generally speaking, leftist, totalitarian, tyrannical states require global compliance. They require it because if ever there's a place where their ideology, governance, power, control does not take place, people will go there. So you need, they need, communism knew that the only way communism would work is if it's globalist. Marxism only works if it's globalist. Islam only works if it's global. Generally speaking, that's how totalitarianism is, and globalism is a totalitarian ideology. What the actual details of the ideology is at this point is kind of irrelevant, but any kind of totalitarianism requires there to be no light of freedom and truth, or everyone goes.
And those of us who pride ourselves on freedom and truth are therefore, by definition, their adversaries or enemies, and we must be crushed.
We must be crushed. As we are seeing, their strenuous efforts to do exactly that. My feeling is I don't have the need to crush them, but I do have the need to resist because they really only want ill to happen. I would call it evil. They really are evil, and we really are the light of good. We want individuals to be able to be the best that they can possibly be. We want everyone to be able to, what the phrase used to be, I don't self-actualize. I don't, that's a little bit kind of, yes, but everyone should have the opportunity to do the best that he or she can do. And we all know that Western civilization, Judeo-Christianity, are the engines behind that kind of empowerment of the individual. And that's exactly why they want to stop us, why they want to stop Judeo-Christianity, why they want to stop Western civilization. We are the bulwark. Our thinking, our underlying philosophies are the bulwark against the evil that they intend to do.
Our audience is very familiar, I think, with this general problem. specifically, because we spend a lot of time talking about it,
yes,
the Chinese Communist Party variety of totalitarianism, globalism. I think some in the audience may be a little bit less persuaded of the danger from what are putatively capitalists out of, say, the World Economic Forum.
Yes, indeed.
That we're told, you know, want a better world and surely can't be as bad as those communists, or for that matter, those Sharia supremacists either.
That's right.
And yet they are.
And yet they most certainly are.
Tell us why that's so.
Oh, they're tremendously cunning. And there's a whole lot of reasons why that's so. But one, during COVID, we kept hearing, do this for your safety, that for your safety, this for your grandparents' safety. Für ihre Sicherheit was how the Germans got through a whole lot of Nazi evil perpetrated it deep into the culture.
What's the definition?
For your safety, for your security. The entire French Reign of Terror was under the health department. It was for your health and safety. I would contend, so they used that to get the tentacles of evil in there, and when we comply because we don't want our grandparents to die, and yet we're doing outrageous things like reporting our neighbors for having too many people or masks. It's very clever how they do this. Now they've moved into yet another thing, which I've been calling für ihre Bequemlichkeit. I use the German because it sounds so awful, and it really is an echo of the Nazis before, for your convenience. And that is the pernicious nature of everything that they're doing. It seems like it's for...
Specifically with the World Economic Forum.
Exactly right. Exactly. Oh, it's so nice if I have all my medical records planted in this little thing. So convenient.
Just have it scanned.
And it's got all my bank accounts. It's got ESG scores are like that. I want to know who I can trust. And so I look for their ESG score, DEI, all of these things are designed and include all of it in quotes. So they have so many ways in to tapping into our desire to do good, but they're exploiting our natural desire to do good to actually have us do the evil.
This
and it's extraordinary.
This is such an important conversation, Karen, because I frankly had not appreciated some of that history, and particularly in the French Revolution,
yes,
as you said, using health as the vector, because as we speak, and we're going to take a short break and we'll come back with more about this, but as we speak, our government is conniving with a supranational body called the World Health Organization to use health, public health, public safety as the vector for crashing our Constitution, our freedoms, and yes, our health.
Yes.
We're going to talk more about that with Karen Sigeman of the American Freedom Alliance. How does this translate in our time into the end of freedom? We mustn't let it happen. We'll find out why it might right after this. Welcome back. We're at the Conservative Political Action Conference with, among other wonderful people, Karen Sigeman, who is the driving force behind a wonderful organization in Los Angeles, the American Freedom Alliance. I'm talking a little bit about an upcoming conference she has coming to LA, but I hope to your inboxes soon, focused on the globalists and the threat they represent. The Chinese Communists, the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum, and so many others. Karen, you were making a really important point about how health has been used as a line of imposing totalitarianism on all of us. Have you been focusing, I think you have, as I have, on this gambit with the World Health Organization? Would this seem to have some of those same hallmarks?
Absolutely, and how they're selling it, marketing it, pushing it, exploiting it is, don't you want us to be healthy, right? It's not, we're gonna do this thing, it's gonna be for, you know, whatever esoteric thing. It's about health. And didn't we just have this terrible scare? And don't you want it to be coordinated from the beginning?
Scare?
Right?
People dying.
People dying, but in part that's because we didn't react quickly enough. This time we'll react quickly.
But also, I think it's because we reacted as we were instructed to by an organization that, let's face it, is controlled by the Chinese Communist Party.
Well, and that's really the most interesting piece of all of this. Yes, it's the World Health Organization, so it's through the health vector, perfect word, into our lives on the back of our wanting to do the right thing by everybody. And a pandemic is the perfect vehicle, because if it's pan, it's global, so we need to address it globally and in a not this hodgepodge patchwork quilt of, you know, even though the places that did less to fight it did the best through it.
But that seems to have something to do with the vaccines that were mandated
by
the Chinese Communist Party and then the World Health Organization.
All of the catastrophe to do with it, because of the measures, not the disease.
Yeah, the response, the China model.
The China model.
The thing that's so troubling about this, Karen, is when we have this kind of conversation, and you're putting it as you have into an historical context, we're not making this up, folks.
No.
This is actually what has already happened to us.
Yes.
At the hands of the people that, unbelievably, the Biden administration is seeking to give even more power at the expense of our sovereignty, to the point where they can tell us what to do. It's not advisory, it's not a recommendation. It's mandatory.
It's mandatory for us, but they are ceding it voluntarily. So sovereign nations are the bulwark against totalitarianism, are the bulwark against global whatever, and for the President of the United States to voluntarily cede the sovereignty of this nation, which includes national security and health, all of that, voluntarily, and we buy into it. And I thought when I posted this on Facebook, the World Health Organization thing, and that Biden is doing this, I was expecting Facebook to slap something on it, because it's too incredible to believe.
Not that Facebook slapping anything.
And they didn't,
because you can't.
But you just mentioned this is really key. So we talk about the globalists within the form of the World Health Organization, and we're ceding sovereignty. But as you noted, who's behind the World Health Organization? It's the Chinese Communist Party. So these two main
threats. And the World Economic Forum, and Bill Gates, and Joe Biden.
And when you're the administration with whom we have endowed the oversight of the security of our nation, in fact, is playing for the other side? I mean, when you put those words together, it's such a horror. It's beyond comprehension. But they don't hide it. They are proud of it, because für ihre Sicherheit. And when you have that for your security, we're going to give up American sovereignty. And I know it's a slightly more complicated, but that is the first step, that in the event of a pandemic, which, by the way, could be climate change. So those are the
could
two
be
vectors.
Gun violence.
Could be gun
could
violence.
Could be mistreated migrants. It could be some
LGBTQ
other pretext.
LGBTQ being an oppressed people.
Indeed. So all of those anything. Under this arrangement that the Biden team is trying to engineer
yes.
would be up to Tedros Ghebreyesus, a
correct.
Completely unaccountable bureaucrat, cat's paw for the Chinese Communist Party, the guy who brought us pandemic 1.0,
right.
the China model response. I mean, it's
yeah,
insane. We're letting him have anything like more power.
Like more power.
Karen, you talked about the convenience.
Yes.
I can't pronounce the German word, but you did beautifully.
Yes, thank you.
One of the things that is baked into this whole program,
yes.
as you know, is this idea that there will be those chips in your skin or somewhere in your wallet that will tell the sensors,
yes.
and I mean that word S-E-N-S-O-R, the sensors, what they want to know
an unhappy
about
homonym, but
you
yes. yes.
in any number of respects, including your personal health, but your finance, who you're communicating with,
who you voted for,
and so on. This so-called digital passport,
yes.
or smart health
it's
card
smart.
Or medical card, is the entry point for that Chinese Communist Party project called the social
credit score.
System.
Yes.
Is that part of the globalist agenda
Absolutely.
As well?
Absolutely. And it's genius, because wouldn't you want to know? It's for everybody's, it's exactly the same as the Southern Poverty Law Center being the clearinghouse for who's a hate group. Don't you want to know who's a hate group? Right?
But not at the hands of them.
Exactly.
And I certainly don't want these guys, the totalitarians, to know.
So it's that writ large. That's that writ globally. And think of what it's connected to, our power grid.
Our loss of freedom, more generally. Karen,
lost.
We're out of time. We'll have you back
marvelous.
Soon. Thank you. It's great
break.
To do it
My
in person.
Thank
God bless you
yes.
and the work of the American Freedom Alliance.
Thank you.
I hope that you found this edifying and that you'll tune in next time for more. And in the meantime, that you'll go forth and multiply.